Seems better to repeat the last part over again. As it goes on, Lord Chaitanya will go on to discuss with Sanatana Goswami the different types of avatars: Guna avatar, Manvantara avatar, Yuga avatar, Shaktivesha avatar, etc. The whole science of how the spiritual world makes its presence in this temporary world. In part also so that someone who claims to be God or some bogus notion cannot filter its way into the line of pure devotional service. And to establish the understanding of the personality of Godhead more than by some sentiment. Someone claiming, yes, I accept God, I believe in God. What is the science of God? Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 8th chapter, text 79. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yadaika Padena Sa Pativarbhakas Tastau Tad Angushta Nipidita Mahi Namama Tatrardham Ibhedra Dhishtita Tariva Savyatarata Pade Pade Yadaika Padena Sapartivarbhakas Tastau Tad Angushta Nipidita Mahi Nanama Tatradham Ibhendra Tishtita Tariva Savye Taratak Pade Pade Yadaika Padena Saparativarbhakas Tastau Tad Angushta Nipidita Mahi Nanama Tatardham Ibhendra Dishtita Tariva Savye Taratak Pade Pade Yadaika Padena Saparativarbhakas Tastau Tad Angushta Nipidita Mahi Nanama Tatardham Ibhendra Dishtita Tariva Savye Taratak Pade Pade. Thank you. Ladies, chant. Nidaika padena sapati varvakas. Tatarangushtana pidita mahi. Nanama tataradam indrishta. Tariva sarvita vipade. Padena sapati varvakas. Gushtana pidita mahi. Nanama tataradam ibindra dishtata. Tariva savyeta tarate pade. Yada.
When.
Eka.
With one.
Padena.
Leg.
Sa.
Dhruva Maharaj.
Parativa,
the kings.
Arabaka,
child.
Tastau,
remained
standing.
Tat
Angashta,
his big toe.
Nipidita,
being pressed.
Mahi,
the earth.
Nanama,
bent down.
Tatra,
then.
Ardam,
half.
Ibha Indra,
the king of elephants.
Dishtita,
being situated.
Tari Iva,
like a boat.
Savya
Ittarata,
right and left.
Pare Pare,
in every step.
Translation,
as Dhruva Maharaj, the king's son,
kept himself steadily standing on one leg,
the pressure of his big toe
pushed down half of the earth,
just as an elephant being carried on a boat
rocks the boat left and right with his every step.
Purport, the most significant expression in this verse is
Pativarbhaka,
son of a king.
When Dhruva Maharaj was at home, although he was a king's son,
when he was prevented from getting on the lap of his,
he was prevented
from getting on the lap of his father.
But when he became advanced in self-realization or devotional service,
by the pressure of his toe he could push down the whole earth.
That is the difference between ordinary consciousness and Krishna consciousness.
In ordinary consciousness, a king's son may be refused something even by his father.
But when the same person becomes fully Krishna conscious
within his heart,
he can push down the earth with the pressure of his toe.
One can argue, how is it that Dhruva Maharaj, who was prevented from getting up on the lap of his father, could press down the whole earth?
This argument is not very much appreciated by the learned,
for it is an example of Nagna Matrika logic.
By this logic, one would think that because his mother, in her childhood, was naked, she should remain naked, even when she is grown up.
The stepmother of Dhruva Maharaj might have been thinking in a similar way, since she had refused to allow him to get up on the lap of his father. How could Dhruva Maharaj perform such wonderful activities as pressing down the whole earth?
She must have been very surprised when she learned that Dhruva Maharaj, by concentrating constantly on the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, could press down the entire earth like an elephant who presses down the boat on which it is loaded.
And the following verse also is directly in line with the same idea.
So I'll read that also. When Dhruva Maharaj became practically one in heaviness with Lord Vishnu, the total consciousness, due to his fully concentrating and closing all the holes of his body, the total universal breathing became choked up, and all the great demigods in all the planetary systems felt suffocated and thus took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Report, while hundreds of persons are sitting in an airplane, although they remain individual units, they each share in the total force of the airplane, which runs at thousands of miles per hour. Similarly, when unit energy is identified with the service of the total energy, the unit energy becomes as powerful as the total energy. As explained in the previous verse, Dhruva Maharaj, because of his spiritual advancement, became almost the total heaviness, and thus he pressed down the whole earth. Moreover, by such spiritual power, his unit body became the total body of the universe. Thus, when he closed the holes of his unit body to firmly concentrate his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the units of the universe, namely all the living entities, including the big demigods, felt the pressure of suffocation, as if their breathing was being choked. Therefore, they all took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they were perplexed as to what had happened. This example of Dhruva Maharaj's closing the holes of his personal body and thereby closing the breathing holes of the total universe clearly indicates that a devotee, by his personal devotional service, can influence all the people of the whole world to become devotees of the Lord. If there is only one pure devotee in pure Krishna consciousness, he can change the total consciousness of the world into Krishna consciousness. This is not very difficult to understand if we study the behavior of Dhruva Maharaj. Om Ajnana Timarandhasya Yananjana Sanakaya Chaksuna Niritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. There are two very combined and very fundamental understandings being presented in these verses. And they're fundamental particularly to the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in which persons like ourselves, unqualified, prior to contact with the pure devotee and the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're in the darkness of ignorance. But by contact and association with Srila Prabhupada and the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we've been able to whatever extent we are able, to render devotional service and to further spread Krishna consciousness. For those who want, for either the gross materialist, the example, the illogic that's being presented here refers to the materialistic person. The expression is nagna matrika logic. Prabhupada uses this, explains the fallacy of this logic in a number of different ways. The example given here, which is one common way of Prabhupada explaining it, that if one's mother, when she is very young, in infancy, if one's mother in infancy is naked, then she should also be naked when she's an adult. It's not our practical experience, nor is it very logical. As the young girl or infant grows into adulthood and into motherhood, naturally A number of different things will become different. What one does as a child or an infant is not what one does when one grows up. If it's true materially, then certainly it's true spiritually. But this is the illogic of the Smartha Brahmana. The Smartha Brahmana says that according to birth, at the time one is born, whatever body you get, whatever family you're in, whatever situation you begin your life with, that's it for the rest of this body's duration, this lifespan's duration. That sets the die. Nothing can change. It's not our common experience, again, and it's not logical that everything will stay fixed and unchanging. It just doesn't work that way. Another example of this illogic is the example of the boatman who is pulling a barge along a canal, and he's thinking, the sharp stones and thorns and along the path, they're hurting my feet as I'm pulling the barge along. So I'm going to save all my money that I earn. And when I become wealthy, then I'm going to pave the path when I'm pulling the barge with cushions so that my feet won't hurt. But little does he know, Prabhupada explains, that when he's a wealthy man, he's not going to be pulling the barge anymore. He'll have some other kind of activity. And here specifically, Prabhupada is referring to consciousness. We say this over and over again when we're presenting our explanation of reincarnation, that as consciousness is transformed, so also is the body. And in fact, this is the way it works, not just from one lifetime to another lifetime, depending upon the consciousness that we have at the time that we leave this body that determines the next body that we'll get. But it's also true in the course of our present lifetime. Because of identification with matter, as the biological and physiological changes of our body go on, so also our consciousness is immediately and directly affected. And correspondingly then, the body is also very much affected. One affects the other due to identification with the body, identification with matter. Just like one explanation was being given by Raghunath Maharaj the other day, just after his class, of you go to Vrindavan, you see old ladies and old men hunched over practically with their face about waist high. And you can understand, he was giving this explanation, you can understand that this is due to their early prior offense at not paying respect properly in proper manner in their earlier age. Therefore, then they're forced by nature's arrangement to then perpetually offer their respects and obeisances. Or Prabhupada has given us this explanation, that people in their youthful days, if they indulge excessively in sex life, then all kinds of complications, including shorter duration of life, but all kinds of complications come bodily, directly as a consequence. You can understand it in one way, in terms of karma, that they're just reaping their benefit, but it's also another way to look at the same thing. It's a consequence of their consciousness. And according to consciousness, then they're receiving a particular body. This human form of life is meant, now these are just all ABC basic understandings of our Krishna consciousness philosophy, that this purpose of the human form of life is self-realization. If one doesn't have, or one doesn't utilize that consciousness in that way, then one's body will be something other than, gradually something other than, the human form of life. In fact, according to Vedic injunction, unless one isn't even considered to be human. This point was also being discussed recently in classes. One isn't even considered human, although walking on two legs and having two arms, unlike the four-legged animals. There is also two-legged animals that are not yet human, according to Vedic standard, unless and until they accept Varnashram society, or a systematic organization for spiritual elevation. In principle and in fact, accepting that structure within society, because other life forms, they also have some kind of structure within their society. The bees have their very intricate structure, the pecking order and arrangement, and you can consider all different forms of life. They also have some more structured than others, some more formal, some more consistent than others, but some kind of, that's there, that argument is given time and again. Anytime there's more than one individual, that's society. There has to be some structure for society. So that structure for society, which leads to progressive spiritual elevation, that's the beginning of human life. So those that live their life something other than human, those who misuse the intention of this human body, which comes from evolution of consciousness, then they're subsequently in the course of this life and in next lives, their body matches their consciousness. Matter comes from spirit. This is our, not the other way around. It's not that our Krishna consciousness is determined by our body. That argument that the smartas offer, we refute time and again in so many different ways. We say to the material scientists, we say that life comes from life. We don't say that life comes from matter. We don't say that spiritual consciousness comes from the particular body that you have. We don't say that. And, as Prabhupada is pointing out, the example of Dhruva Maharaj clearly identifies that as a fact. Although, although he was the son of a king, he was not in a very powerful position at all. Such a powerless position as a child, that at the word of his stepmother, he could not even sit on the lap of his father. But very shortly thereafter, he became so powerful, what to speak of sit on his father's lap, he could depress the whole earth with his toe. So this factor of empowerment is the basis of our Krishna consciousness movement. That one can become empowered spiritually, and certainly if one can become empowered spiritually, through that spiritual empowerment to do all kinds of things by which spirit moves matter. And we generally call that material. When living entities move around this planet and start manipulating, trying to control by their technical knowledge, trying to control matter in so many ways, to exploit it for sense gratification, we call that material activity by dint of material consciousness. And spiritual activity springs from spiritual consciousness. If in fact one can become spiritually conscious, and if it's not a fact, then what are we all doing here? Or the story of Dhruva Maharaj is a complete fabrication, we can throw all scriptures into the ocean. One can become spiritually conscious, although in a prior condition of not so spiritually conscious. And as one becomes spiritually conscious, one can perform activities that one previously couldn't even consider performing by being empowered to do so. But not only matter can move on the force of spirit, but even other spiritual entities can be moved from their position. This point Prabhupada is making in the following purport. And it's, you have to follow this explanation very carefully, because it's, in fact, I had to read this several times before understanding it clearly. Prabhupada gives this analogy of an airplane. Excuse me. And hundreds of people sitting in the airplane. So although each of the persons sitting in the airplane is only one person, they're part of the collective force of the whole airplane. The airplane's moving along at hundreds of miles an hour, and one person is also, but not only one person is moving at hundreds of miles an hour, but the force of that plane they're part of. Of course, you cannot say there's the other side of it. We give the Achintya Veda Veda Tattva argument. There's the other side of it, that the unit is not the whole, but it acts as if it's the whole. The next, there's a semicolon, and Prabhupada goes on writing, similarly, when unit energy is identified with the service of the total energy, the unit energy becomes as powerful as the total energy. Now, we usually say this in the following way, that when one serves Krishna, then one's actions are on behalf of Krishna. So Krishna is acting directly through the individual. But Prabhupada is taking this statement a little further. He's saying that unit energy becomes as powerful as, or the same, identified in a like manner. If you were just going back to the first analogy, if you were to take that one individual who's riding in the plane going hundreds of miles an hour, if you were to remove the plane and remove all of the other passengers, and then you just have this one body flying through space, flying through the air at hundreds of miles an hour, the force of that individual is not the same as the force of the whole plane and all of its contents. However, when the individual is riding in the plane, that force is, if the plane were to hit something, the force would be considered in a collective manner, not in a unit manner. So in the same way, when we're serving Krishna, we have the whole force of Krishna acting. This is an important point to understand in our preaching work or in our attempts to spread Krishna consciousness. As tiny and puny as every one of us is, when we're acting in a manner that is authorized and directed by the spiritual master, in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, we're acting as if Krishna is acting. And depending upon the consciousness, because this is the point that Prabhupada is making here, focusing in on the pure consciousness, the pure Krishna consciousness of the pure devotee, acts non-differently than Krishna acts. So then proportionately, we can understand from that proportionately, to the degree that we are Krishna conscious, we we are acting in the same manner as Krishna's acting. Any one of us trying to push on Krishna consciousness alone, as Srila Prabhupada initially did, coming to the West, it would be very, very difficult. In fact, Prabhupada was quoted as having said, if any one of you referring to early devotees, if any one of you had to do what I had to do, you would have failed. You would never have been able to accomplish. Not just endure the hardship and difficulty, because after all, hardship and difficulty we're also enduring. And what is the breaking point or the threshold point of the hardship and difficulty that we can endure? We can endure a lot. But having the same Krishna consciousness as the pure devotee, that's a whole other thing. On the strength of that Krishna consciousness to transform the consciousness of others, that requires a very, very pure and elevated Krishna consciousness. Many, many people, Prabhupada changed their lives. Many people who didn't even become devotees. What to speak of, so many people who became devotees. And so many people, even until today, who are becoming devotees, simply on the strength of the very same thing that made us devotees, Prabhupada's books. That potency was very intelligently recorded and preserved in the form of these transcendental writings. Prabhupada is continuing to. He gave, was for years giving, and is continuing to give his transcendental association. As he quoted his Guru Maharaj having said, if in the course, Bhaktisiddhanta would say like this, that if in the course of my life, only one, even if only one person becomes moon-like, then I will consider myself, my mission to be successful. All it takes is, as Prabhupada is describing here, one pure devotee, or one extremely sincere person, soul, to take the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, to take the message very, very seriously, utmost seriously, and live accordingly and push it forward. And as Prabhupada writes, the whole world can be transformed. One who has faith in that principle, faith, Prabhupada defines in Bhagavad Gita as unflinching faith in something sublime, unflinching trust, rather. This country was founded with that kind of ideal. In God we trust. Now it's in something else they trust. In whoever has the most economic influence they trust. So we shouldn't fall prey to the same kind of mistake in one who has the most economic influence we trust. In God we trust. Unflinching trust in something sublime. That's faith. One who has faith in the words of Krishna and the words of spiritual master, unflinching faith. That is the necessary consciousness, the necessary initial ingredient of consciousness to transform others. Because others meaning, simply by definition, others who aren't in that same consciousness, others who have their faith reposed elsewhere for all kinds of reasons, due to their own material consciousness principally, having trust in matter because of their own identification with matter. And this is the challenge in our preaching work. And everyone that's a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has this challenge to face individually. Because as much as each of us individually can face that challenge, then collectively also we can face the challenge far more effectively. One who has that great faith inspires others. Consistently. And as others become inspired also, then their heart as Prabhupada writes here, becomes changed. In ordinary consciousness, a king's son may be refused something even by his father. But when the same person becomes fully Krishna conscious within his heart, he can push down the earth with the pressure of his toe. In other words, something that's impossible becomes readily possible. Even for someone who is a puny weakling, materially or spiritually, can become so powerful that materially there's no limit to what they can do. And this example of Dhruva's breathing, this is part of the yoga practice that Dhruva Maharaj was performing. But by checking and conquering over even this powerful force within one's body as breathing, as Dhruva was practically conquering that, his unit effort was being felt everywhere. If it was being, and as it was being felt materially, certainly also spiritually. As he was checking his breathing, he was also checking the breathing of others, even the most powerful demigods. His action became like the action of the personality of Godhead. When one becomes spiritually empowered, that's the practical result. One's action becomes like that of the action of the personality of Godhead. It's a reciprocal thing. That only becomes possible by the empowerment of Krishna. And one who is empowered by Krishna only wants to do those things that Krishna wants. It's a reciprocal arrangement. If one doesn't have that faith, then one remains an ordinary conditioned soul, going on to some degree of piety and some degree of impiety and some degree of knowledge and some degree of bewilderment and illusion. The opportunity is being presented by the instructions that are given. Dhruva didn't have extensive instructions. He had to practically pry the instructions from his spiritual master. But he was so anxious, and even his motivation was not the purest of motivations. Later on, that not so pure motivation became very pure. In fact, he became embarrassed to pieces at that impure motivation. But nonetheless, nothing could stop his devotional service. He very, very, very sincerely wanted to reach his desired goal, and Krishna was the object of that goal, the summum bonum result of his effort. So thus he became completely purified and as powerful as Krishna himself. Not that the devotee is desiring in some mundane way, some competitive way, to become equal to Krishna, but this is the practical result. One becomes empowered as Krishna is empowered, or as Krishna is powerful. In such a circumstance, nothing can stop the devotion and the devotional service of such a dedicated and surrendered devotee. So this is very important understanding, nice example to remember while performing your sankirtan, your preaching work, or just in the course of social dealing, difficulties that arise within your devotional service, conflicts, problems, different little surrenders that you have to deal with. One can become empowered to transcend any material situation. Any material shortcoming can be transcended. Any. There isn't any that cannot be transcended. And this is the understanding of the faithful devotee. So any comments or questions? Yes? If Dhruva Maharaj can push down the whole surface of the earth with his big toe, then certainly we can overcome any mental obstacles without psychoanalysis, just by becoming Krishna conscious. Because we don't have sufficient faith in Krishna, we turn to some other thing. To solve our problems by some material arrangement. You'll never solve your problems that way. Some stopgap measure may be arrived at whereby the pressure is relieved for some time, and then again the pressure will come, because you really haven't solved the problem. The problem is we're lacking in Krishna consciousness. We're heading in the wrong, we're utilizing our energy in the wrong way, and therefore we have a problem. That's the problem. We're not Krishna conscious. We're not acting in harmony with the Lord's will. We're trying to find happiness in some other direction, some other manner. That's the problem. Same way in trying to perform our preaching work. We may call upon so many things other than simple faith in Krishna. That's not to say that we cannot utilize so many things. It's a question of consciousness. But if we're not in the proper consciousness, we can do something that has a big risk in it or no risk in it, and still it's going to be a failure because we're not in proper consciousness. Anything else? I expected there would be a lot of questions on this one. The answer to your question is the same that Prahlad Maharaj gave to his father. They're getting their empowerment from the same place. Because that's for two reasons. That's what they want. And they've undergone the necessary austerities, etc., to entitle them to that empowerment. Of course, it's that empowerment is also their destruction. Whereas the empowerment of the devotee is in sublime and leads to eternal activity in devotional service.